Good evening, everybody. We are live from the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey. Hi, make some noise. All right. And as you can hear, we got a nice audience tonight. I want to thank everybody for coming out. We're starting early tonight, and I did tell people that we were starting early tonight for a big special announcement. And a surprise guest sitting with us tonight from Wine, Women, and Revolution is Heather Warburton.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
She's not the only surprise guest, but I'm going to turn it over to my colleague. For those of you that don't know, New Jersey Revolution Radio is worker-owned. Some of the people that work here aren't owners, but Heather and I do the day-to-day full-time work.
We're the idiots of this company.
So she's half of New Jersey Revolution Radio ownership, and she does all the graphic design work. She's our creative director. She does a phenomenal job. Whenever you see something, essentially, it has gone through Heather. So it always looks, if I did it, it looks better. And if she did it, it looked good to begin with. So she deserves a lot of credit. But she's here tonight to talk about something really special. So I'm just going to turn it over to my partner and my comrade, Heather Warburton.
All right. So we have a fairly big announcement tonight that, you know, we've been doing podcasts and a media company for, we're coming up almost on our 2-year anniversary. March will be the 2-year anniversary of NJRR. And so we're kind of expanding out in a new direction now of we are launching our video production company. And what that means is that we can produce short movies, short documentaries for partnering organizations who, you know, couldn't possibly afford the price, being priced out of the kind of productions that they might like to make, like a high quality production. And so this is a new service we're able to offer people. And part of that new service is we are starting to produce original documentaries. And that is what we are about to do tonight is we've made a trailer for our very first documentary. Right. And we're starting to ask for funding to help make this trailer into a full feature length documentary. And I guess maybe we should, are we ready to do the preview of the trailer now?
Yes, we are. I am. So have you known, like I've said before, we are not CNN. So it always takes me just a second to do these things. But before we bring on, we have another special guest. I'm going to fill this space with babbling because I haven't done this right yet. Okay. Now we're here. All right, everybody. Here we go. This is the trailer.
So if I was to ask you right now, who is Blake Spencer? What would you say?
I would say a pastor, a husband, and a father.
Blake is a pastor at Ocean Heights Presbyterian Church. He ministers to a community of 100 on matters of God, love, and inclusion.
And yet the Ku Klux Klan chose that very town to gather a very large crowd to rally around hate. Hate. Because that is what prejudice is. Hate, because that is what racism is.
This is Blake's home, where he lives with his husband of 2 years, Jim.
Well, you're probably right, because it's called a pioneer cake. So, and then the pioneer day, I know, but we're not in the pioneer's days, and we had vanilla, and we added the vanilla.
I have two children, Wade and Maddie, who I share with my ex-wife, Laurie.
Would you say you're happy with who you are today?
Oh, yeah, I am. I can finally honor who I know that I am. And yeah, I'm happy.
But that hasn't always been the case, right?
No, it's not been the case. It's been a journey.
So why do you want to tell your story now? Why do you want to relive such painful memories?
Well, it's my story, and I believe my story can help other people. I want to help other people.
So where do we start?
Oh, I think we need to go to Texas.
My mother was a force to reckon with and completely beautiful. And that hand betrayed me, and I realized all my bullying and pain was caused by something I couldn't control. So I sat on my hand and I fought it all down to somewhere I didn't even understand. This friend from seminary who was in my wedding said, "You can't get married to her, you're gay." And I was really angry with him. It wasn't until Africa that I really understood who my father was. My wife and I co-pastored a church together. Now everything was changing. We knew our marriage was over. What now?
So let's go to Texas.
Oh, hey.
Hey, we can't quite see you, Blake. He's there. So welcome to the show, Blake.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, yep, that's your life. What made you want to produce this documentary with us?
Well, the thing I've been thinking about since you filmed is, you know, my story is a gay story and what it means to survive and move into kind of a thriving life, but it's not just a gay story. It's about living life and feeling like you're the wrong piece of a puzzle and never really fitting in. And then finding out that I really belong to a whole nother puzzle and it's way more beautiful.
I love that line.
Thanks. So I wanted to butt in. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But can you tell us how you guys met and where this concept come from a little bit? Like, how did this idea start? Because we have a trailer. It didn't just pop out of nowhere. It's pretty amazing.
So Blake and I met each other. There was a local school in Egg Harbor Township that had, they were attempting to pass a transgender protection policy for the students there, for the transgender students. And a local church decided to organize opposition and brought out like probably 50 to 60 people from that church to prevent it from happening. And in the organizing to protect these students, we got a pastor on our side as well. And that was where I met Blake, that he was the, we call the other one the evil pastor. Blake was the good pastor.
And this is the same thing that I believe you live streamed this meeting.
I live streamed the meeting. Yeah. We talked about it a few times.
One of our biggest views on YouTube, I think. Even though, you know, it was a horrible time, it did draw a lot of interest on that call. So I appreciate it. So then we started talking about this story. I am assuming there was coffee had.
Coffee
was had at some point, right?
Well, actually, Blake reached out to me about it. Basically, we were talking about making documentaries, and I think I would like Blake to say why he reached out, because it was one of my favorite compliments I ever got from someone.
Well, you had originally put it on Facebook that you wanted to go into documentaries, and I said, okay, I'll do it, tongue in cheek. And then you called and said, "Are you really serious?" And I said, "I'll talk to you." And I think what you're referring to, Heather, is when, you know, you knew my story and you said, you as a producer of this documentary had to know why you're telling my story. And I've known you enough to sense that you were a safe person and I didn't have any problem telling you a lot of stuff on your radio, on your podcast. And you're a safe person because you know what it's like to be an odd piece of puzzle. To be what?
To be weird were his exact words. He's like, weird.
I didn't say weird. You said weird, but I love weird.
That's
love
a compliment where I come from. Weird is a good thing where I come
from. So yeah, now we're trying to make this whole documentary. This was, you know, we made the trailer as sort of a proof of concept, but you know, now we're asking for help. Basically, we have to go to Texas. We have to go to Florida. you know, we have a lot of travel of various places to tell the whole story of Blake's life. So we're kind of asking for help now. For anyone that thinks that this, because I believe this movie can change lives and Blake's story will change lives. Mm-hmm. And anyone that believes in this, we need to ask for donations and help to make this movie happen now.
Y'all, you just have to give money so that Heather ends up in Gatesville, Texas, because they're going to... We're going to be in jail.
Some of this money.
Texas kind of scares me. So
yeah, some of the money
will be okay.
Some of the money may be bail money.
We have a lot of resources here at Revolution Radio, and we're proud of what we've built. And it's thanks to you that showed up at the coffee house tonight. It's thanks to you at home that watching the live stream and chipped in a few dollars. You can see the link scrolling across the bottom. Yeah. And just before we went live, we put up a post with some links in there where you can donate specifically to this movie and to NJR Productions, which I think we got to touch on a little bit before we move along from Heather. But NJR, this effort is not a solo effort to do one movie, even though it's a really special project and we're here highlighting it tonight. We are doing other video projects. We have produced other projects for smaller organizations as we built this business. Mm-hmm. And if you've got an organization, a small business that qualifies, like I always say, Walmart is not going to hire us. Citibank is not giving us a call for sponsorships or anything like that. This is where we can reach out to our communities of interest and the people that support our messages and the kinds of things, the kind of work that activists do across the state of New Jersey, whether it be food justice or anti-imperialist work or whatever. These are the communities that got to support New Jersey Revolution Radio. And this is the way that we can support you right back by giving you good messaging, by producing good looking videos. Media is important. And you know, and I know that corporate media doesn't report on what we do enough. So Heather, it's her brainchild. I probably talk too much about it, but I'm just really proud of what we've done here at New Jersey Revolution Radio. And I'm really excited that Heather called me Monday and told me she was opening up a video production studio and we managed to promote it by tonight.
So, yeah. We
good job by all of us, right?
Congrats, guys.
Yeah. I'm so excited about this. Like, it's a brand new direction for us, but I think it's really going to be in a great direction.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going. And I just want to thank Blake for being in this journey with me, you know, that we're in this together now and we're going to change the world together.
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
We look forward to the completed project premiere, right?
Yes. I can envision it already touring like the circuit, you know, this opening with Tribeca. Who knows where we're going to end up. Yeah. I think Blake said he already picked out his tuxedo for the Oscar.
I need the soft lens, though. That's what I want, the soft lens.
Blake, on behalf of everybody, Diane and everybody at New Jersey Revolution Radio, we're really excited to have you as part of the organization, as part of the media crew work that we're doing. It means a lot to us, man. And your story, I know it's not always easy to tell a story that's traumatic like this, mm-hmm. but I think it's going to do a lot of good. And we do hope that you get the support. And thanks again. So we'll talk to you soon, brother. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Blake Spencer. Bye, y'all.
Thank you.
In slicker times. Now, as we said, it's part of a team, and part of the team on this project is going to be one of our next guests. Christian Perez from Modernity Absurdities podcast comes here once a month. Everybody say hi to Christian.
Yay.
And Tom's coming up with me. And Tom Violet, who's live streamed on NJRR. He works for the Green Party of Monmouth County and the Green Party of New Jersey. You hold a state position with the Green Party of New Jersey too, right? No, never mind. Thompson, he hangs around this a lot, though. Okay.
Member of the Green Council.
That's
the
true.
State.
But thanks for joining us. And I want to thank Christian first, because as I said, this is part of a team. And Christian's helping us with the grant writing and trying to get some of the financing for that movie. So again, you know, there's some teamwork going on at NJR. And we thank everybody that's doing their part. And especially if you go to the website, check out the trailer, share it, and give us a few dollars at home, too. So that would help as well. Those sites are up and running. And if you have questions or whatever, you can always email us info@njrevolutionradio.com. Diane,
okay.
They're going to tell us all about South America and that mess.
In 10 minutes or less.
You have a good 14 minutes here.
Okay.
Go nuts.
Okay. It makes it too easy. Too easy. So,
I can pick up where we left off.
Can we touch on Bolivia? Because I think because of our Venezuelan embassy protectors, we have a little bit more info to talk about with Venezuela right now.
Okay,
so
good.
Where are we at with
Bolivia?
Our coup president?
Yeah, so President Morales is so in Bolivia now. Mm-hmm. President Morales is in exile. Mm-hmm. Currently, he's in Argentina. Recently, mm-hmm. he was in Cuba getting some medical attention. But he is in Argentina. They did decide, the current government of Bolivia did decide, that he is not allowed to run for president. There was some talk about him running for president. He won't be allowed to do that. There was talk about him maybe running as a congressman, that he won't be allowed to do that. So he was able to name two successors, one guy coming from the city, another guy coming from the rural area, both members of his party, MAS, MAS, the Movimiento a Socialismo. Mm-hmm. And there were two main opposition candidates for president. One was the current president, Añez. She's the mm-hmm. woman that was elected by, you know, not elected, but nominated by whatever right-wing people decided to show up for government when they came in. Mm-hmm. So she's the current sitting president of Bolivia. And her main opposition in the opposition was mm-hmm. this guy named Camacho. I brought him up the first time. Mm-hmm. He's the white supremacist and the, you know, the fascist guy who, when Morales fled Bolivia, he's the one who went into the presidential palace, waving the flag, saying all mm-hmm. kinds of weird, like, Christian fundamentalist stuff. So mm-hmm. he decided to step down, and he's putting his support behind that Añez woman, who, like I said, is the current president of Bolivia. Mm-hmm. So the opposition is trying to gain support from the formerly alienated middle class, the wealthy elite, of course, and anybody who feels that they were left out by Morales's movement. Morales' supporters, you know, they're trying to, you know, keep their strongholds in the rural areas among the native population, the people of color, and some of the more urban areas.
Okay. And
I tried to, you know, minute waltz, 30 seconds.
Yeah, no, that was pretty comprehensive. And Evo Morales, you said he's in Argentina.
Yeah, he's in Argentina now. He's in exile currently. But before we get into Venezuela, I want everybody to keep in mind that he was threatened. His life was threatened, that if he comes back to Bolivia, mm-hmm. that they would arrest him. They tried to get Interpol after him. Now, we can counterpose that with the current fake president, Guaido, of Venezuela, and the trouble that he doesn't seem to be getting, that he's not getting from the government, right? Like, he's able to just come into the country, didn't get any problems in customs. It's people that are coming after him, but not, no government institutions are doing it. Mm-hmm. So on one
did
behalf,
kill his dog. I saw somebody post
I don't
on
know
Facebook.
About that. I'd have to look that up. I don't know about dogs. Dog. I don't support dogs getting killed.
He tweeted that he missed his dog.
Guaido did?
No. Morales.
Oh, Morales. Yeah.
Eva.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I don't know. They had to leave Bolivia quickly. They had to leave Bolivia quickly. But I mean, you could look at the double speak. It's always Orwellian double speak when you deal with these people.
Yeah.
It's always two sets of standards. The right wing could do whatever they want. They could threaten. They could be openly racist. Mm-hmm. You know, God forbid the government thump this guy Guaido, throw him in a jail cell. There would be international condemnation.
Yeah. And now we're going to go on to Venezuela. And just like, where's Waldo?
Yeah.
Where's Juan Guaido?
So
he's still not the president.
Still not the president. Still unelected. And piggybacking on what I said about the Orwellian doublespeak, mm-hmm. Not elected by anybody, but still 50 countries, where the leaders of 50 countries tend to are all throwing their money behind this guy. Mm-hmm. Their literal money behind this guy. Mm-hmm. He just finished a 3-week world tour, the Juan Guaido Screw Over Your Own Country tour, 2020, and went to Spain. Was treated really well in Britain by Boris Johnson, met with Emmanuel Macron in France. There were pictures of him with Trudeau, met with Trump in the White House. Mm-hmm. And then hashtag leader of the resistance, Nancy Pelosi, even took a couple nice photos with him grinning like a used car dealer. So that was that was unfortunate. I don't want to offend any used car dealers, but that's where we're at now. Tried to come back into the country, was assaulted by Maduro supporters, calling him a fascist and a traitor. And interestingly, there are people who think that the way to get people to support you is to take resources away from them. This idea that if we further sanctions on Venezuela, that magically these people are going to jump to Guaido. And really, it's an act of desperation. It's not an act of salvation. And you know, again, it's the doublespeak that we're dealing with.
Yeah. And we have to end the sanctions now and stop supporting fake governments, which now is our segue.
Yeah, fake governments.
Into the Venezuelan embassy protectors. We had some updates. We know they went to trial last week, And where are we at now?
Yeah,
they, and so for, maybe we want to talk about who the embassy protectors are.
Yes.
Very quickly, because yes. there's some new people here with all these new platforms.
Okay.
Let's
so a little history yeah, going so, back to about
Yeah,
was
so
it April?
A little history goes yeah. back to actually April 10th, mm-hmm. When it was a group of people at who were given the keys, a key card to the embassy in mm-hmm. Washington, D.C., and asked to protect it. And in the beginning, they had events there. There was up to, I believe, 70 people mm-hmm. living in the embassy because mm-hmm. it's in Georgetown. It's a three-story, it's a huge building.
Mm-hmm.
And then on, I think it was April 30th, was mm-hmm. when they had the fake staged media coup mm-hmm. with Juan Guaido that obviously didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then directly after that, a bunch of thugs who supposedly represented mm-hmm. Venezuela, but were in fact just, you know, paid mercenaries, mm-hmm. took over in front. And then it became much more difficult to access the embassy, and they eventually cut off the water. They cut off the electricity. They wouldn't allow food to get in. And it basically dwindled down to four folks who were the embassy protectors at that point. And they were Kevin Zeiss, Margaret Flowers, Adrian Pine, and David Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And on May 11th, they were arrested on May 16th. And it was directly mm-hmm. after Jesse Jackson was able to get food in there.
Yeah, because they were struggling for a while.
I think the government saw the writing on the wall that they weren't going anywhere. They actually had a lot of food, we learned later. They had a lot of water. They were using survival skills. And then they shut it down, and they went in and they charged them with, and I have to read this because it's so ludicrous and bizarre.
Yeah.
They were charged with interfering with certain protective functions. It took them a while to come up with that because they couldn't charge them with trespassing because they weren't trespassing.
It sounds like they broke a condom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of.
Certain.
I don't know.
Certain? Could you say that?
It's a certain protective function.
I don't think you're familiar with that. You have five kids, but...
That prosecutor needs to review those statutes, I'm just saying.
So that was called interfering with certain government functions, correct?
With certain protective functions, yes. Protective functions, yeah. And so they had a trial, and the trial began on February 11th, and last Thursday it ended in a mistrial. And on February 28th, they're going to go in front of the judge again to determine if the prosecution, if the government is going to retry the case.
Mm-hmm.
My gut is that they will, because they were embarrassed and the prosecutors were not prepared for any type of defense, which the protectors were allowed to have a bit of a defense. And apparently it was enough to persuade the jury or to become a hung jury.
Yeah. And some of the things that really struck me that were just so completely outrageous were that prosecution filed a motion to limit what evidence and testimony could be, including, that they would not be able to state that Nicolas Maduro is the lawful president of Venezuela.
Orwellian doublespeak.
Yep.
It's the same thing. Orwellian doublespeak.
Because that would lead to Carlos Vecchio was the, we have fake president, Juan Guaido. Well, we have
fake ambassador. Right.
Carlos Vecchio. So they didn't want him to have the authority to say these folks have to leave now. And right before they were arrested, I think it was within 2 to 4 days, Carlos Vecchio actually created a fake eviction notice. And it was hysterical. Oh, yeah. It was just like a handwritten notice.
With no letterhead.
Like kindergartner. Mommy says, leave my house.
Yeah, they actually, I think we were down there that day because Diana and I went down a couple of times. I was there May 5th and May 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And, the police actually did go in and they had a long conversation and they basically said, look, this piece of paper is not worth, you know, the ink it's written with. And then they explained to them what the Vienna Convention was, and Article 52 was that the government is required to protect
the key word, protect the embassy. And if you evict us or arrest us, you're in violation of that. And this has huge ramifications for every embassy around the world. And do you really want to be responsible for that? And DC police basically turned around and said, and they left. Yeah. Now, supposedly what they were allowed to do in trial was say that it was a possibly Nicolas Maduro was the or hypothetically was the president. So they were allowed to say it. So at least that, though, allowed something to be said to the jurors, even though they didn't hear about the protests or the Vienna Convention or any of that. It was able to enter some kind of doubt in their mind. So it, you know, it ended up in a mistrial.
Yeah. And then we have February 28th. We'll keep our viewers and listeners informed. I know that at the website of, you have the website, right?
Yeah, I have the website.
They're still soliciting funds.
Yeah, because they still face, I mean, they face a year in jail and $100,000 in fines. Their resolve is that they, you know, will go to prison. They're not going to give up, but it is a lot of money. Plus, you know, they're paying their lawyers. So they have a website, and let me just scroll and find it. It's defendembassyprotectors.org. That's all one word, defendembassyprotectors.org. You can go right on there and make a donation.
Yeah, any amount. And hopefully they won't retry. But I don't know.
I just have a feeling they will.
Insanity, but I guess we shouldn't.
What do you think? Are they going to retry?
What was that?
Are they going to retry?
I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, I don't want to be negative, but I don't really have any faith in the system anymore. So you don't know when you know the people in charge can do what they want with impunity. Without consequence. We don't know. And if you make the mistake of confronting the empire, you're going to pay for that. So I tend to hope for the best, prepare for the worst. I mean, trying to block an embassy, I mean, that can come back to bite them.
Yeah.
And having been down there like with Diane, it was the most surreal thing I've ever seen, that our government authorities, different police forces, be it the Uniform Secret Service, the I don't think the DC police were there, the Metro police were there, the there was like four different police departments, and they were protecting these people who are thugs and who are committing crimes. If you walk down that sidewalk, you would be assaulted and you would be arrested for bleeding on them, I guess. It was just totally insane. And this isn't all they did either. One of the journalists covering it, who was also in the embassy, Max Blumenthal, on October 25th. Now, this is a good, what, 4 or 5 months after they were arrested, at least. They invaded his home in D.C., SWAT style, and arrested him. Well, I don't even know. They arrested him, held him for 2 days, didn't let him make a phone call, totally violated his civil rights. And didn't charge him with anything and then released him. So this is a journalist. So, I mean, it's not just them. And there was someone else, too, that was I think maybe somebody with Code Pink. But we saw people arrested
I think it was Medea Benjamin.
Medea Benjamin, same thing. They came to her and tried to arrest her.
I think with Max Blumenthal, there was fake complaints about him assaulting someone from the opposition. And I could be wrong, but there was lots of videos all over the place. So all you have to do is look at those videos and see the opposition goons were really frightening. I've been in a lot of uncomfortable situations in my life, and I'll tell you, a couple times walking around live streaming on the opposition side, felt really, really uncomfortable.
Oh yeah, because you didn't know what they would do.
Yeah.
When we first went there the first time, I went on that side and I looked around, and they're like, "Oh, what are you here? What are you doing?" You know, I said, "Well, I'm just a tourist." But yeah, they were very threatening.
Absolutely.
And you know, this is a public sidewalk, and they just took it over.
Yeah.
And the cops are letting them.
Yeah.
And you know, it was insane. And I remember one of the police cars right on it had a sticker that said, you know, "We're here to serve." I was like, how bizarre.
Yeah. So we'll keep everybody updated.
Sorry.
28th.
I just wanted to say one more thing before I hand off the mic. I was recently featured on an episode of Wine, Women, and Revolution with Heather. So if you get a chance, check it out. It was the most recent episode. Brief History of U.S. Imperialism.
A lot.
What was that?
You've been on a lot more than I have.
It was twice.
I don't think so. Have I?
You got to get in the club. But thanks for having me on the program. Give it a chance. Wine, Women, Revolution, Brief History of U.S. Imperialism. Check it out.
I must have less pull than I thought. I must.
So now we have a word.
Yes.
Brian.
We're going to.
Sponsors.
Yes. We have. Is your mic on? Do I hear you through your thing?
Yeah.
Do you hear yourself?
I hear myself.
You guys hear Diane out there?
I'm just not as loud as you.
That's who is. Tonight at the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey, is brought to you by the August Agency. Charlie, who you're going to see his information after I'm done with the commercial, scroll across the bottom of the screen, is tonight's sponsor, does QuickBooks for us here. Heather and I are not exactly capitalists. And so I always say that communists make terrible capitalists, and it's true. The work that gets done behind the scenes by the August Agency here and tonight, in addition to sponsoring New Jersey Revolution Radio, I'll tell you where Charlie is tonight. Charlie is in Essex County at the Freeholders meeting, making sure that we speak up for immigrants' rights. That's why he's not here at the Coffee House tonight, because he's dedicated to social justice. The August Agency is one of these comrades' businesses that we just flat out need to support. So you can visit Charlie. I don't know, put up his information. I didn't have my messenger up, so right now. But and I'll make sure I say his website at the end of the podcast, and I'll fill it in editing later. But I want to make sure the August Agency, take a look, and Charlie over there at the August Agency does a great job, and he needs your business. So if you've got a small business, or you need somebody to look over your books or whatever, give the August Agency a call. Also sponsoring 360 Poetry Night with Justice, March 21st, 2 to 5 p.m. at the Newark Public Library. They're going to do Words in Wellness. We here at New Jersey Revolution Radio did Weed Women in Wellness, where we had women get together and discuss cannabis-related issues with health and also some other stuff. But they are going to do Words in Wellness. As some of you know, Justice does 360 Poetry Night. Some tremendous spoken word artists, hip-hop artists, and all kinds of artists, painters and sculptors, and a violinist that raps. It's amazing stuff. So check out 360 Poetry Night. They're on Facebook. We partner with them. They're one of our partnering organizations that we do some media and promotional work with, and we're excited that that partnership is expanding as well. So check them out and support them. Diane, are we going to plug Margaret's book one more time?
Absolutely.
Let's plug Margaret's book one more time.
The week we celebrate racist presidents, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right.
Instead of celebrating racist presidents, go out and purchase Margaret Kimberly's new book, which is Prejudential.
How do we spell that for everybody?
Okay, we're going to Google it.
Margaret Kimberly is the name of the author. And her first name is spelled, or her last name is spelled K-I-M-B-E-R-E-L-E-Y. There's an E after the L that I messed up when I posted our article one time. So I didn't forget that. So make sure you spell her last name correctly. Prejudential is spelled?
Yes, it is. Prejudental. And the subtitle is Black America and the Presidents. I've been reading the book. It's excellent.
We
shouldn't be in shock, because we all know the history, but we sugarcoat our racist presidents and take all the statues down, you know,
it's,
just make it easy. Just,
I mean, yes,
the Confederates.
It's history I didn't learn in high school.
Yeah.
You know, it's history. It's Zen. It's a modern day take on, you know, presidents from an African-American perspective. And I've been touting a lot of, listening to African-American experience, African-American perspective, and try to read and get a little more absorbed into that culture.
Yeah.
And it's really educational and really good for no matter who you are to read this and get American history from the viewpoint of, not the establishment, not, kind of a racist culture that's been ingrained in our current educational system. It's a different point of view than I learned in my schools. I know that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know it's available pretty much wherever you're purchasing your books online. I believe it's the Strand Bookstore. Might be still a little bit more independent. Yeah. So maybe try to order it from your independent bookstore. But regardless, it's a must read.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right.
So we almost are having sort of a mini reunion because Teresa Markila is one of our excellent Green Party organizers. But I know we've all been busy, and Teresa is like the Energizer Bunny. That's what I always have said since I first met her.
There's always a lot going on.
Yeah, lots to do and undo, right?
Absolutely.
So for our viewers that don't know Teresa, she is an immigrant. She is an educator, an advocate, an activist. From her areas of activism range from anywhere from environmental, immigration, and poverty. And tonight we're going to talk about how these issues intersect. And I know with some of the work she's been doing, it relates to those issues. So your newest project is the Great Foodscape, correct?
That's right. Pretty much every issue connects with pretty much every other issue that we work on. We all know about the intersectionality of everything in this country. And it's been a very interesting, long journey for me from immigrant rights through environmental issues and poverty issues to realizing that food is kind of at the center of all of these issues in some way, as both a cause and an effect of all of these other things. And from as somebody who has gone through poverty a lot in my life, I'm formerly homeless. I have gotten food from food banks. I have dealt with welfare. And I know that in this country, there is huge amounts of food insecurity. They estimate, I've seen anything from 30 to 50 million people who are food insecure in this country, half of them children. And I think the number is actually much, much higher than the reported numbers. So it's an issue that affects everybody. And hunger is something that we all resonate with. Mm-hmm. We all know what it's like to have missed a meal and to be hungry, if not what it's like for long-term hunger, which is an entirely different issue. Mm-hmm. So it affects everybody, and it's something that everybody is concerned with. And I think it's long past time to start dealing with this issue.
So for people that aren't familiar with the phrase, what do we mean by food insecurity?
Food insecurity is basically anybody who doesn't know where the next meal is going to come from. Okay. So this could cover a lot of people in a lot of very different ways, mm-hmm. and it's treated in a lot of very different ways. There's obviously the people who go to food banks. There's a lot of people who don't go to food banks because food banks are inherently undignified, have very poor selections of food, and are not really a good answer to it. So a lot of people will send their kids to family and friends to have them feed them. For example, a lot of people will put off paying bills in order to buy better food. They will cut off their internet in order to buy better food. So there's a really big invisible population of people who are really hungry out there, mm-hmm. And scrambling to try to find food at any given time.
And so the Great Foodscape, I know you've been doing a lot of traveling and learning. So what is going on right here in New Jersey with the Great Foodscape?
So the Great Foodscape came about as I was thinking actually mainly about environmental issues at first. Mm-hmm. And learning that in the United States, we only have about 50 to 60 years left of agricultural topsoil in this country. And then after that, we don't know where our food is coming from.
Wow.
50 to 60 years, and that's it. So if you have children, if you have grandchildren, wow. It got me to thinking, what are they going to do?
So does this mean the current farmlands or?
Yeah, industrial agriculture is very, very difficult on topsoil. The top layers of soil on the earth, which is, you know, the best for where our food comes from. It's been poisoned with chemicals, fertilizers, pesticides, all because the chemical industry and the oil and gas industry have the lobbyists and have the money and have the voices. And they have put out of business a lot of the local farmers, the small farms, the organic farms, in favor of these gigantic industrial farms that are owned by a small number of people. And what they're doing is they're planting monocrops and they're spraying them with all kinds of things. And they are basically ruining the soil. So they're killing off the pollinators and they're ruining the soil. And when we have bad weather conditions, lots of rain, and we've seen here in New Jersey a lot of hard rainstorms in the last couple of years, which have been problematic in my garden a little bit. But it erodes the soil.
This past season for me was terrible.
Yeah.
With my backyard garden.
Yeah. Part of our group was out with tarps every time it rained to try to cover the garden so that they wouldn't wash away. And it was very much of a challenge. And these kinds of things are going to keep happening and keep getting worse every year. And so with the erosion of the soil and not knowing where the food is going to come from in our grocery stores in the future, it got me to thinking, what happened before there were supermarkets, right? What were people doing to feed themselves and their families? Well, we all had a kitchen garden. We all had a local farm. We all, you know, had our food growing locally. And we had a great diversity of food, which is really important for maintaining the soil and the ecosystems and the health of our diets as well. And I thought, we are so far removed from that agricultural heritage, the knowledge of our ancestors, that we are pretty much out of luck if something happens, unless we start to relearn these skills. And everyone I was talking to said the same thing. My mother used to have a garden, or my grandmother used to have a garden, but I have no idea how to plant anything. So a few of us kept talking about this idea and thinking about it. And we finally started this group, The Great Foodscape, which we thought would be a way of teaching people. So we needed to learn more too. And I'm by no means a leader or a spokesperson for the food justice movement. I'm a student of it. And I'm learning as I go. And as I go, I want to teach other people. And I'm privileged to be able to access this great diversity of seeds from various sources that I'm giving away to people for free.
This is just a very small sample,
but I will give out to anyone who wants some here. I'll let you take a few
home.
You should have been here,
people on the live stream. They should have came. You're sitting at home. We can't give you seeds over the internet. Al Gore stopped short of inventing an internet.
Have you ever seen peppers like this?
Look at these funky carrots. That's what they're supposed to look like, right?
When you go to a grocery store, there's no diversity in the food there. It's the same few options, and they don't taste very good.
Yeah.
And they don't have as many nutrients.
Lumpy tomatoes, but what they're supposed to look like and nothing.
There's hundreds of varieties of tomatoes. So the idea is we learn how to plant our own food, grow our own food, whether it's in a few pots on the balcony or in a kitchen window, to a raised bed, to whatever it is that you want to do. We encourage everyone to start small and learn. And we want to support people's learning and to help educate them. So we've done presentations on composting. We are starting to schedule some seed starting events. And so we have one booked now in Madison in March where people can come and we'll bring some little pots and some soil and some seeds and we'll show you how to get started and give you some more seeds to take home. We're going to be planning a few other ones, mainly around the Morris County area, but maybe one locally here too, I think. So we're also doing composting presentations, and we managed to get a whole bunch of composting bins at a reduced rate last year that we donated to people or delivered to some people for donations to help cover the costs so that people can start composting as well. I brought a compost bin to my work, so people are now bringing their food scraps to my office and we put it in the compost bin so we can share the compost and help to cover the costs of so people don't have to buy compost as much. We have our compost and we're going to share it, and we're going to encourage people to save seeds from the foods that they grow as well. It's really important to save the seeds from what you've grown for the next year so we don't have to keep paying for them buying from them from companies, but also because they evolve and they adapt to our local climate. Mm.
So they become better as we grow and continue to reuse the seed products that come from them?
Yes, we save the seeds from the ones that did the best, that performed the best, that tasted the best, because we know that they'll do well in the next year. Excellent. And a lot of the seeds that you buy in stores are what they call hybrid seeds. You cannot save the seeds from those. You do not know how they're going to work out. They're designed so that you go back to the company that made them and buy more. They are mainly profit-making tools. A lot of the companies are designing and patenting their own seeds, genetically modified seeds, so that they can own the patent, so that you have to keep going back and buying them. So they're not free, but seeds are free. Seeds should always be free.
Yeah.
Seeds are nature. It's our gift from Mother Nature to survive. And so I really strongly believe that food is a human right. Food is out there and it should be accessible to everybody. So we want to save the seeds and we want to share them with each other. So we're going to encourage little local hubs of seed sharing and exchanging across New Jersey, starting kind of from the north where I'm based, but moving elsewhere as we get supporters and helpers.
So you would help us in Union County?
I would help you in Union County if there's a demand for it there.
I think there is. I think we have a friend, Sean Smith, who is excellent with the compost making skill set.
Terrific.
And I think we can find a rain barrel trainer also. So let's bring this to every county.
Absolutely. Now is the time to start thinking about planting your garden too. If you want to grow some plants, some things you can start planting now ahead of time in pots, and some you can plant some pretty soon outside. So now's the time to start planting. And our idea is not just to plant and grow for yourself, but we want to encourage people to share with their communities. So we are going to be going into low-income communities and working with residents to access their yards and teach people to grow food themselves, but share with their neighbors as well. Sort of a community garden idea, but it's open to everybody in the neighborhood. So we're going to be doing a lot of work with low-income communities to try to give them access to the food as well, because it can be really expensive to start growing your own food and it's a lot to learn. So we're going to be supporting, helping them do that as well.
And help to do a setup to get it going.
And to find and train young people as well to help. And we are always grateful for donations to help with anything that we're doing, by the way. But part of what we want to do is to be able to hire at-risk or low-income youth to help do the work. And we'll give them a stipend in order to help them do that. So it's a community building effort as well as food. The most food insecure people in this country are not people who look like me. They're people of color, indigenous, African-Americans, they're immigrants, living in what we used to call food deserts, but now we call food apartheid neighborhoods, where they don't have access to fresh food. They don't have grocery stores in a lot of cases. They really only have fast food restaurants, gas stations, corner stores where you're lucky if you can find any kinds of fresh produce at all. So they're really a key neighborhood for us to work in.
Okay, excellent. And you mentioned that you're accepting donations. Where can folks go who want to donate?
We do have a GoFundMe site. It's gofundme.com/the-great-foodscape. We also have a website, thegreatfoodscape.com, where you can also find a link to the GoFundMe page. Okay. We're also on Facebook at The Great Foodscape.
Okay. So on Facebook, our viewers can look for these great events for how to jump in and participate. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We always post the events that we do, the public events that we do there, so people can join us. And we try to share a lot of tips and information about gardening and about different kinds of foods and different kinds of food justice struggles, which are happening everywhere around the world. And actually, I prefer the term the fight for food sovereignty over food justice. Food justice is mainly about making sure that people have food. It's pretty basic. Food sovereignty means we have the power to decide what food, and we have the agency to grow our own food. And that's healthy, culturally relevant, and democratically decided what we're going to grow together as communities. So it's not a matter of like the traditional anti-hunger industrial complex where they just want to get calories into you. It's about healthy food that's right for you and for your community. Yeah. And the power to make the decisions for yourself.
And I've always felt that nothing tastes better than, I don't regularly enjoy tomatoes, except the ones that are grown in my backyard.
That's always
like
the way.
Nothing.
They don't taste good. I mean, it's store-bought tomatoes are, they're picked green.
Yeah.
And then I think they put them on a truck with CO2 to redden them, right? So essentially you're eating an unripened tomato.
And they're bred for this purpose. They're tasteless, but they're designed to look nice on the shelf.
I'm not on camera.
And be affordable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Good.
And it's so wonderful when you, last year was not good, and I'm sure a lot of you had a rough season. But I love when I have an abundance.
Can you see that?
And I'm giving it to the neighbors, friends, family. There's certain times of the year you come to my house and you leave with a goodie bag.
That's one of the most fun parts of it, to be honest. I mean, gardening itself is fun. People also will think it's just a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money. But actually, studies have shown that gardeners are healthier. They live longer. They're happier. And there was actually a really interesting study, and I hope I have time still.
Oh, yeah. No, go.
from 2009, 2010, I believe it was in California, there was a study of agricultural laborers, so people who worked picking our fruit all day, who were food insecure themselves, as most of the people are who bring us our food, by the way. And the study was about giving them a community garden to see if they would use it and it would increase their intake of fresh produce. Mm-hmm. And all of these, there was, I think, 500. No, I'm sorry. There was about 50. I'm thinking of another study who participated, and they all reported huge increases in their fresh produce for themselves and for their children. But they also reported that they really enjoyed doing the work. So they were in the fields all day picking our fruit. And then going home and gardening was their idea of relaxing.
Wow.
It brought them closer to their families. Their children would come and help, and they just really, really enjoyed it. And so it's not just work. It's fun and it's good for you. And when you get to harvest it and eat it, it's even better, and especially when you can share.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I heard something recently also that there may be something in the soil with the minerals that
the actually, microbes in the soil that yes
this,
yes
so
studies
heard this as well
yeah studies have shown that these microbes in the soil actually do make you happier. I think they boost your endorphins, but I'm not entirely sure on the mechanism of it.
But it's
kind of like runner's high or something.
I love playing in the dirt. So everybody this year, let's play in the dirt together.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Okay. Thank you so much, Teresa. I know
thank you. We
have our...
Yeah, we are. Everybody. Teresa Morgado.
Thank you so much.
And I know with our wrap-up, we talk about local events. So what is your next upcoming event to start our wrap-up?
I will tell you in just one second, but actually I just want to add something else really quickly that I forgot to mention in relation to food insecurity. I have a friend who is a teacher, and a lot of you may have seen in the news lately the issues with children's lunch debts at school.
Oh, yeah.
And so I can't give too many details, but this child has severe autism and Down syndrome. Her family is an immigrant family, a low-income family. And the teacher was advised today that just since September, when the school year started, this child owes $220 in lunch debt. And they are going to start shaming her as of, I guess, tomorrow with the cheap version of the food that they give to the kids.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. So I would gladly accept any contributions that anyone would like to make towards paying off this $220 lunch debt for this student, and also we can take that on our GoFundMe page as well if anybody would like to help with this student.
Listeners and
viewers. I like my idea better.
What's that?
They should put the principal and the superintendent in jail, take their cars, sell them, and pay for all the kids' lunches.
I would second that.
How about that?
Anybody who tries to...
Or anybody that thinks a kid should have to pay for lunch at school.
Yeah.
For that matter.
Yeah, and then they give them a
completely immoral
lunch.
But we'll go with Teresa's idea and put a few dollars in the hat. All right.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Thank you.
So we'll pass around.
Okay. When I was a kid, I used to get free lunch. When I was in middle school, my parents weren't doing well. And there was a lot of depression that comes with your parents not having a lot of money. The last thing I needed was somebody to rub my face in it. And it's absurd that these school districts do that to these kids. It's a shame. But sorry, that's my two cents. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
That's a special kind of sick evil for any school administrator to be food shaming.
Thank you.
Children who are already in, as you said, situations, they know what's going on in the home. So it's like rub the salt in the wound a little bit.
It's completely inhuman and immoral.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for all you do, Energizer Bunny.
The GoFundMe page, the GoFundMe.com. It's our great Foodscape page, so it's not directly to the student, but we will give the money to the student. GoFundMe.com/the-great-foodscape.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so our wrap up and events, because I know we have to. Oh, okay.
There's only a couple of them, and the first one's yours, the one that you're keying in on because it's in a different country.
Yeah, Brian won't leave the fine country of New Jersey. So our first event coming up is the UNAC conference. That is the United National Anti-War Coalition, and that is going on at the People's Forum in New York City. It's on the NJRR Facebook event page. It is Friday, February 21st through February 23rd. I'm going to be there. I am on a panel and a workshop. So
and Abby Hoffman, did you say that name? I was busy fiddling with
Abby Martin.
Abby Martin.
She is Abby Saturday Hoffman. Evening.
Me and my mom's ADD does that to you.
And we have our...
Abby Hoffman would be cool, though.
I don't think we're digging him up from anywhere right now.
After party.
Yep. So the UNAC conference. Go to UNAC Conference 2020 for more information. And
Weed Women and Wellness.
It. Oh, yes.
North Jersey, March 29th. So you can check out the Facebook page for that and a bunch of other events. One more time, we want to make sure you check out New Jersey Revolution Radio, njrevolutionradio.com. Video productions, Wine, Women, and Revolution, events around the state. We do website builds, and we run Board of Education meetings and cause a ruckus. So if you enjoy what we do, please support us in a way that you can, any way that you can. And, you know, there's a lot of people always asking for donations. I think the important thing is that you give to something that does good for society. So whether it's giving to the great Foodscape or New Jersey Revolution Radio and Internet Media or your local soup kitchen or something, you know, give what you can. It's proof that the working class gives a larger percentage of their money into charity than those of us that have way too much. And that's just one way we are better than them. So we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Do you have anything else, Diane? Are we good?
No, that's it. See
all right.
You.
Go ahead. You go, Liz. You're the star of the show. You wrap it up.
This weekend.
You wrap it up. Everybody, this is Brian Powers, and I want to remind everybody that the police can quit their jobs.
Yes. And this is Diane saying, I want to see you in the streets, and I want to see you at the UNAC conference this weekend. Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming out.